All right, everybody, welcome to the Home Service Pro podcast. I'm very excited to have Don Korshaw with us from basements to rough home inspections. Don, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, of course. So Don, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you at? What do you do? Tell us all the good stuff.
Wow, I live in Rochester Hills, Michigan. We're about maybe 15, 18 miles north of Detroit. I am a home inspector. The name of my company is Basement to Roof Home Inspections. I've been doing this for 9 years. Mm-hmm. Previous to being a home inspector, I spent 20 years as a handyman. Mm-hmm. I'm also a licensed builder. Mm-hmm. So I have 29 years of either working on or inspecting houses. Mm-hmm. I have a partner. My partner is my son, Matt. And, you know, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad to work with family. Problem is I can't fire him, so.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's all good. We work well together. He doesn't mind hanging out with the old man, so it's all good. We're happy. We're blessed. We love to be alive today.
Yeah. Awesome. So tell us what made the shift from handyman to home inspections? What were some of the decisions that went into that?
Well, I'll be 58 here in a couple weeks, and I saw 50 coming on the horizon. Mm. So it kind of made me think, you know, at some point in time, I'm not going to be able to climb and haul and hack and grind like I did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was working 80 hours a week as a handyman. It was just, and doing estimates at night. I was going crazy. So I thought, what can I do that I can use my knowledge and experience, but not have to keep grinding when I get into, you know, I plan to work maybe 65 or, I mean, if I can go to 70, I'm great. I'm still standing. I'm going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what did it. Mostly just predicting physical. And then before, way back, I was a chef for 5 years, then handyman, then home inspector. So I've been standing on my feet, working on my feet for 33, 34 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized it's going to catch up to me. So that's – and also I fell off a ladder about – on day one of being a handyman, like my first day independent as a handyman, I'm pressure washing a house and I fell off the ladder. And so I'm feeling that in my, you know, in my bones. So that's what made me get into this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a good start to the handyman world, but Don, and a lot of handymen that we talk to, you know, the struggle that I see over and over is what you're kind of finding. Like it's hard to scale it. You know, you find yourself working really long hours or working really late at night. And the truth of it is that craftsmanship is really challenging to scale. It's hard to scale something when it takes a very special, unique skill, you know, and, you know, and I, in just reading up on you, you know, I know you kind of take a common sense approach to things and to life. And it's like, sometimes handyman stuff is, you really have to be able to think on your feet, really unique situations. You don't know what you're walking into. And so it's, I'm never surprised when I hear someone frustrated about the limitations that come with running a handyman business. It's so difficult to scale because it really depends on you, the owner and the person doing the work.
It is. And here's the thing is this, and where do you go to school to do that?
Right. Yeah.
It's not like you go to Handyman University. Hey, there's something for somebody. Start that business, Handyman University.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, because where do you go to learn that? What, your dad? And then what if your dad didn't teach you that? And then Uncle Bob or Grandpa or whatever, Cousin Joe. I mean, how do you learn that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I was fortunate. I worked for a guy for 3 years. And I said, wait a minute. This isn't brain surgery. It's not like he's teaching me how to cut into someone's head. I mean, I can do this on my own. So I was there with him for 3 years, and then I went off on my own. And that the day one on my own, that's when I fell off the ladder on day one on my own. And, you know, I'll tell you what, here's what's happened to this is I had the ladder up against the house and I was pressure washing and I fell right. And the people in the house was eating dinner and I fell like right behind their dining room table. And I came down. I'm laying there like this, you know, and they come out like, we'll get an ambulance. And I said, listen, I don't have health insurance.
Yeah.
I'm not paying an ambulance $3,000 to take me 2 miles. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So I just kind of got up. They called my wife and hobbled into the hospital and got sewn up. And the next day I was back on the job.
Wow.
You have to be. I mean, if you're right. self-employed, you don't get, I get a comp day or I get a sick day.
Yeah.
It don't happen. You're getting to work or you're not getting paid. So
right.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah, I've fortunately in our business, I've never fallen off a ladder, but I do remember when it was just me in the business, and I actually had like a minor surgery, right? Not a big deal, you know, in and out, but I wasn't supposed to lift more than 50 pounds. Or no, it was something really small. I wasn't supposed to be lifting stuff. And part of us with our reoccurring services, we deliver softener salt here in Minnesota.
Oh.
So I've got these clients, you know, yeah. And it's just me, you know, you're a solopreneur here. And I remember taking the softener salt bags in the back of my truck and I would put them into little pails. And I could walk all I wanted, but I couldn't lift. And it would, you know, it hurt to lift that after that surgery. So you got to do what you have to do. And those are the things that people on the outside, they don't see that side of being an entrepreneur. They don't see the, there's not an option here. Like you have to do it. You know, there's no other option. Like you got to do it.
I know. I agree. And here's the thing for everybody out there punching the clock, ding, ding with the clock. They love it. It's great. But here's the problem. Your boss, and it's easy to think, well, I'm getting so many hours, I'm getting paid so much, and blah, blah, blah. But the problem is that your boss is working 4 or 5 hours after you leave and punch clock. And that's the thing about being self-employed is there's no one behind you. There's no HR. You got 3 or 4 hats on your head. You trying to keep it all the plates in the air and floating and everything. It's hard. And also, like you said, it's hard to scale a service business because here's the thing. People like if I work like all my work as a handyman was all like repeat and referral. I didn't advertise. I didn't even have a website. So they're expecting Don to show up. And when I have Joe show up, they're like, well, who's this guy here? Yeah. We're expecting Don too.
Right. Yeah. Cause on that level, they're hiring you personally because of your craftsmanship. You know, it's not as easy. Are you finding that in the home inspection world working with your son? Is that not as, you know, are they not as picky about who shows up?
Well, once they hear he's my son, I have had people like I worked for them and they bought a different house down the road and they're like, well, I can't do it, but my partner Matt can. And like, hey, who's your partner, Matt? He's my son. Okay. All right. All right. We'll take him. You know, cause I tell him, cause he grew up with me in my handyman business. And he went and got himself a business management degree. And the thing is, I'm still managing. He's working. So I'm still doing all the managing. But I haven't really had a problem with that because of him being my son. And we've been working together for about 6 years. So everyone's seen him. And when you read our reviews, you see Don and Matt in our reviews. People read our reviews. It's okay. I got two people. I see Don and Matt. So then, all right. Then it helps them to accept him because he's been reviewed. People are talking about him and he knows he's my son. So
sure.
I haven't really had a hard time with that with him. But like I said, if I had someone else, and I don't like putting my name on other people's work. And you can do that. And here's a problem. It's very easy in a service business to hire all kinds of people and get all this business and going on. But the problem is this, you lose contact. You lose that personal connection when people know I'm dealing with the big kahuna, you know, and it makes a difference in a business. And it's just, especially with like home inspections. If you think about it, I walk into a house I've never set eyes upon. I have 2 to 3 hours to tell people everything possible about this house. So, and if you think about also a house, how many nooks and crannies are there in a house? I mean, attics and crawl spaces and basements and all the different ins and outs. And I find myself peeking in the little tiny corners of things that I find stuff. So if I have someone who's not as diligent, not as invested.
Right.
I mean, let alone finding these days anyone willing to work in the first place. I mean, it's not as hard. And so that's why I would honestly rather make less money and have less frustration. And for me, I have this term I coined in my head about 20 years ago, and I call it mental money. Mental money. The lack of frustration, I can take a little bit more, a little less money. More frustration, more money. And it's kind of commensurate between frustration, money. I try to find that balance to where if I'm not making enough and I'm frustrated, then I'm not digging it. So that's kind of the balance I try to find. It is that is, I mean, if I, and like in the inspection business, if I have to drive an hour to inspect a piece of crap house, then you know it's hard, and if they're little, and it takes more time to do the house too.
Yeah, I talk to so many people that are frustrated in their business. You know, like when you really pull back the layers of the onion, they're frustrated. And one thing that I've really found is exactly what you just touched on, Don, is if there's a high profit margin, they usually they're fine because
Yeah.
the money's worth it. I'm getting paid enough to do this. But if their
Yes.
profit margins are low and they're dealing with nightmare, you know, stuff or whatever. And a lot of times, unfortunately, what it is, Don, is these people just say yes to too many things. You're just doing too many things and then you're not excelling at one. It'd be like if you were still trying, if you were doing like home inspections and you were still trying to do handyman and you were still trying to be a chef all at the same time, your mental money would be pretty low
Pretty
because,
low.
yeah, you're just trying to do too
Yeah.
many things. And that's like, especially in the handyman business. If you don't say no to certain things, like if you don't specialize within that, like if you try to build a four season porch for one person and you try to hang a picture for another, you're going to be really frustrated at all the different things because it's like, well, yeah, you can do it, but is it worth it? And that's unfortunate. So for a lot of people that I talk to, if you're frustrating your business, and a lot of times it's in that like 500,000 to a million mark, like right in there, maybe plus or minus a couple hundred thousand, but it's they're frustrated because they're trying to scale. And the profit margins aren't high enough. And they're like, this isn't worth it. And you can't even hire someone. You can't even replace yourself because you're not paying yourself enough money. Like you're maybe paying
I
yourself 50, but no
know.
one else would do it for even, they wouldn't even touch it for less than 80, you know, something
Yeah.
like that. And yeah, so it's really a frustrating thing. So I always encourage people like get rid of the stuff that's not bringing you joy or mental money
Yeah.
in your case, because it's just not worth it.
No, I agree. And there's been a few times when I thought, man, just you know, this last couple of years, this last honestly 3.5 years, it's been a real challenge. COVID, obviously COVID, you know, everything just went, you know. And then right now, what's happening in the real estate market, and everyone, I'm sure everyone knows what a mess the real estate market is. Our business has dropped 30% because what's happening is a couple things happening. First of all, there's fewer houses for sale, because let's say you have a 3% mortgage and you want to move up to a bigger house with a 7% mortgage, a bigger house that's overpriced with a 7% mortgage, who's going to do that? So everyone's sitting tight on a 3% mortgage for one thing, and they're not selling. And then also, you know, interest rates are high, not historically high, but high for what we've seen in the last whatever 10 years or so. So when it's happening is this: you get people 20, 25, 26, 27 years old, right? Out of college, got a good job, say, hey, let's buy a house. And they've only seen and heard of the 2, 3, 4, 5% mortgages. They're not as interested. And this world is upside down. This world is on its head, spinning in a circle right now. So there's a whole lot of things going on where people's like, I don't know what's gonna happen. And then people are like, well, what's gonna happen in November with the election? I mean, there's a lot going on that people is kind of hunkered down in their basement with a blanket over their head, kind of. So there's a lot happening, you know, in the real estate market, that's not exactly promising. Now, my thought is this: when things do break, whatever happens, whatever something has, you know, whatever goes up will go down, what goes down goes up. I mean, life is cyclical. So once the condition, whatever, interest rates lower, price, whatever happens that changes things, I think I'm gonna be going nuts for a couple years of all the pent up desire. Do you even go back? Let's go back to 08, 9, 10 during recession. There's still some of that residual. There's some of the high interest rates and same prices. So once things become normal or sane, or whatever normal or sane is, and you know, if you can define that,
Right.
I think we're going to be going nuts for a couple of years.
Okay.
That's my hope.
Yep. Right. Yeah. What are you doing, Don? Like when you say business is down 30% as a business owner, like what are you doing to combat that?
Honestly, I'm giving you my honest answer to that. Not a whole lot, because I'm not minding it. I mean, we're making, like, between the two of us, we'll probably, our gross receipts this year about 300, maybe 3.25, something like that. Yeah. So I'm okay where I'm making, you know, I'm mm-hmm. getting by and, you know, paying myself halfway decent.
Yep.
And I see, actually, I'm 58 right now. I will inherit enough paid for investment property within the next maybe 5 years so that I honestly won't have to work at that point.
Sure.
So I'm just kind of getting by, and because I was grind, I had ground, you know, I was a handyman, and even when things were better as a home inspector, I've been grinding for a lot, 6 days a week,
mm-hmm.
10, 12 hour days for a long time. So part of me is like, you know, not so bad. You know, the overgrown hedges are getting cut, you know, the paint, the house is getting painted, you know, because for 20 years, when I put my truck in the driveway and apart, I wasn't, tools weren't going on. I wasn't working on my house.
Right.
So
the plumber's
I'm the
pipes
guy,
leak, as they say.
I'm the guy with the plumber with the leaking pipes, and
yep.
and because I've just been plumbing all day. So
right.
I'm doing a little bit of that. I'm catching up on some education because to maintain my certification as a home inspector, I have to do 20 hours a year of continuing education. So I'm doing that.
Sure. Yep.
And then also, one thing I'm doing is I'm in the process of building a real estate investing company.
Okay.
I'm taking all the knowledge from doing handyman work, from the home inspections, my contacts with realtors,
mm-hmm.
and my current project now is I am building a real estate investing company. And that's what I'm working on right now, is a little bit on my time, so that eventually, as I don't have to work, but I mean, I'll be, let's say, 60, 62, 63, something like that. I have no desire to sit and watch Gomer Pyle all day. So I'm going to be out working and grinding and doing my thing. You know, I don't golf. I don't have the patience for golf. I can fish, but I just plunk a worm out there with a bobber. But I mean, my goal is to work until I just kind of plunk over. Now, maybe retired for me, my vision of retirement is like working 30 hours a week or something like that.
Yeah.
40
right.
hours. If I could work 40 hours a week, that'd be woohoo, I'm retired. You know? So that's,
yeah, that's what's unique about entrepreneurs. You know, they're gonna entrepreneur, you know, I mean, they're gonna do their thing. And retirement doesn't really sound super attractive to a lot of entrepreneurs, and a lot of, you know, unfortunately, if you just stop, like if you go from working full time and you just stop, you've got to do something for your mental sanity. Because I think, like, if you don't have worth, like if you can stop working, but like, you better start volunteering or like going to read to kids or do something.
Yeah.
You got to do something to fill up your time. And like you said, 30 hours a week sounds pretty nice. That sounds pretty relaxing. So
yeah, I'd be chilling, kicking back, doing that. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Well, that just attests to your work ethic. You know, that's, yeah, I agree. Like when I sit around and I'm supposed to be on paternity leave or whatever right now, my wife and I are overdue for it by a few days. I'm like, I don't really want to sit around and do nothing. I it's not enjoyable for me. I can sit on the front porch and have coffee for a half hour, but then the hedges
need
to be trimmed and let's go. So,
and well, here's what happens to me is I have a clock in my head. It goes tick, 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 tick. And what's happening, I'll get like 15, 30 minutes, 40. And I've been productive in the last half hour, 45 minutes, you know, it hurts. If I go on vacation, I can chill. But here's what happens to me. Like the day before we start to leave, right? Let's say for on vacation, we're leaving Sunday. Come Saturday, my brain starts like, okay, getting back to work. Let's go. Get back to work. You know, my wife is like, come on, you got one more day. You enjoy yourself. I am. I'm enjoying myself fine. I'm getting back to work.
Yeah.
It's hard to just call it. And it takes me, like, if I can say I go on vacation, I'm I'm a beach dude. I like to beach myself with a little margarita with the umbrella in it, you know.
Yeah.
Day one, two, I'm still kind of like checking my schedule. And then, you know, 2, 3, 4 days, I get to calm down. And then the last couple of days, I'm like, I'm getting
Yeah,
back to work soon, you
for
know.
sure.
So that's what, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but that's how my brain functions.
Yeah, no, I think well, I do think you're in a unique silo of individuals. You know, when you're that entrepreneur, you do have to be gone for a certain number of days. Everyone on my team, I require it, but I don't necessarily enforce it. But I want them to take at least 5 consecutive days off in a row. Because you gotta leave, you gotta check out. Like you gotta be able to unplug. And I know it takes a few days, like you just mentioned, to unwind and then
Yeah.
and things like that. The scary part for me when I'm on a trip is I'm like, then I start brainstorming like bigger, better ways that the company can do it. So while I'm laying, you know, up on my feet up at the beach, I'm not reading a enjoyable novel. I'm sitting there brainstorming different, you know, the next big business idea that I could do or implement. And yeah, but I mean that's part of and. I, you know, try to take a week off a quarter, you know, try really hard to do that just for my own sanity, you know,
Yeah.
and maybe it's not necessarily going to Cabo, but maybe we go camping as a, you know, I have a young
Anything.
family, you know, we're, you know, I'm in my mid 30s and, you know, we're, you know,
Okay.
so a camping trip is that it's not very expensive and, you know,
Yeah.
gets the job done to just be gone and away and I don't know if I'm ever completely unplugged. But I, you know, I'm, you know, I, you could get a hold of me if it's an emergency, but I try to be gone for a little bit. So.
That's my thing, is this is my phone. See, so what happens, I all this every call and email and to the business goes through me. So the problem is my partner Matt, my son, he's not he's I don't want to say he's antisocial, but he's not. I can get up there like I'm doing now. I can flap my jaws all day long, talk to people, be in a crowd of people, and hand out my card, shake hands, and kiss babies and all that. I mean, I can do that all day long. But he's like, you know what? I'll be over here. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm good. He's a little, you know, OCD. So the problem is he's not the one to be answering the phone and doing all the, you know, the stuff that I do, because he doesn't have that. He's not wired that way. And the problem is, if I go anywhere, I honestly take my schedule on my phone and I'm still answering phone calls. So here I am on the beach with my, you know, you have the cucumbers on your eyes, right?
Yeah.
Laying on the beach, and then my phone rings because I'm the only one in the company who can do that. Now, we have tried answering services in the past. It's not that personal connection. Like when you call an answering service, they don't know all the ins and outs and all the different details of the business. And I mean, they did good. They were great. I mean, it's not that. It's just not the same. And then I have agents that I get probably 5, 6 people calling me a day. Like the part of it is, hey, Don, you did our inspection 3 years ago and we had this weird thing. How do we fix it? And then I'll tell people, like when I do their inspection, I say, look, I am this close from you right here, any point in time. I'm this far away. So you call me if you get a weird thing with your house, or I have a leak, you know, what do I do? That kind of stuff. And you know, and I get that. And it's back goes honestly, that goes back to service and being available when people need you. And also the inspection business. What's happening right now is everyone is just kind of, there's like, if you took like a pack of lions and threw one steak in the middle of them, there's like, everyone's fighting for that one steak, and there's 20 lions fighting that one steak because there are few houses, and people, you know, want 20 people for every house. So what happens is the agents are having to sweeten the pots, you know, sweeten their offer. And what they'll say, what's happening now currently is, I want a 3-day inspection window. Typically in a sane market, they give you 7 days when the buyer signs their agreement, like with all the agents, everyone's people signs the agreement. They usually give you 7 days. But now what's happening is this, they want 3 days. So the agents are trying to scramble, and if I'm already busy, then I'm booked out for 4 or 5 days, and I'm their dude, right? I don't want them going anywhere else. So, and what's happened to me is I'm working like till 8, 9 o'clock at night because one of my favorite agents. If I get an agent that's used me 50 times and we go back 7 years and we're buddies and that kind of thing, I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get there and be there for them. So if I'm just tired, dog tired, and work, every day in a row and they call, I'm like, yeah, I'll be there right there, no problem. Because it takes the and also in the service industry, we're selling service. I mean, and part of service is being there and being available and being dependable and meeting their needs. Because, like I said, they could find someone else. I mean, if people look at our reviews, they rarely go past just that, because we have some stellar reviews, so that's good. And I have some great relationships. I'm really big on interpersonal relationships, and one of the things I learned in business is you have clients and then you have customers. Clients and customers. The customer is the one-off person who does the inspection. The client is actually the agent who's sending me 20, 30, 40 jobs a year. That's the difference. So I have to be there for the client and the customer also. I mean, and the buyer just the same. But the buyer is a one-off. I'm there for 3, 4 hours and have a nice day. Thank you very much. But for the agent, we could have a like I have agents who send me work every week. So for them, let's say if I plan something on a Saturday afternoon, like we're gonna go out and do whatever, right? My agent calls and I call them super dupers, right? I have agents that have been with me for 7, 8 years. They become a super duper, right? And I tell my wife, she knows. She's like, "Is it another super duper?" It's a super duper. So when super dupers call, I'm there. I don't care if I'm whatever. If I'm going to get brain surgery, I'll stop that to go do the super duper, because it's that relationship. They're the client, and they're I'm constantly have that relationship.
Right, for sure. Yeah, that's awesome, Don. Yeah, I can tell that you've been in the industry and you understand the value of the customer service for sure. And I think that's one reason why you guys are probably staying busy through this unique time where a lot of people in the home service industry feel stale, like nothing exciting has
Oh,
happened. Blah, you know. So kudos to you on that. But Don, as we wrap it up here, if people want to get a hold of you or get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
I have a website. My website is basement to roof home inspections.com. I also have a YouTube channel. I have some videos. Like if I'm doing an inspection and I get a weird thing, I'll put a video on my YouTube channel. So if you look up my YouTube channel, Basement to Roof Home Inspections, it's there. Email, you can email me at don@btrhi.com. don@btrhi.com. Phone's ringing here. And then everything, you can get my cell number off of those things. So if you want to call me, you can. But here's the thing is this, I'm really only interacting mostly with people right in my area. But if there's someone like, man, I'm looking to get into being a home inspector, or if anyone wants to chat, or hope you have their own web podcast, get a hold of me. I'm here. Let's do it.
Yeah, sounds great. Awesome. Well, that is Don Torsha of Basement to Roof Home Inspections. Don, thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your journey today.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
You bet.